Big news! Wayfair's end of season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end of season savings, and it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Story number one. I don't really talk about this because every time I think about it, I get that same cold, crawling feeling at the back of my neck. This happened 2 years ago when I was driving back from a business trip through upstate Pennsylvania. It was around 2 in the morning. That stretch of highway is something else. Just 2 lanes, no lights, and the forest pressing right up against the road like walls. You get the sense that if your car died out there, you'd be swallowed whole by the dark. The trees lean over, blocking out even the moon, and your headlights only illuminate this narrow cone in front of you. Beyond that, nothing. Just black. I'd been driving for hours, half hypnotized by the repetition of the lines on the pavement, when something broke the pattern. My headlights picked up a figure, a young woman. She was standing completely still on the gravel shoulder, far too close to the lane. Her dress caught my eye first. Long, white, looked like it belonged in the 1950s. It was tattered, like she had dragged it through mud. I tapped the brakes instinctively, trying to process what I was seeing, but the second I did, she was gone. Just gone. My stomach dropped. Before I could even make sense of it, I heard a heavy thud right on top of my roof, like something had landed there. I slammed on the brakes so hard my seatbelt locked. Heart pounding, I scrambled out, expecting to see, I don't even know what, a branch maybe, an animal. But the road was bare. No sound of wind, no insects, just silence pressing in so thick I could hear my own pulse. That's when I saw her again. She wasn't on the road this time. She was standing at the edge of the tree line, almost blending into the darkness. Her face, what I could see of it in the high beams, was pale and expressionless. But she was beautiful in a strange, haunting way. Something about her eyes, though, felt wrong. Too still, too heavy. I don't even remember making the decision, but when she lifted her arm, gesturing vaguely like she wanted help, I found myself nodding. She came forward, smooth and quiet, and got into the passenger seat. The inside of the car felt smaller instantly. I noticed her dress smelled faintly of smoke and something sour, like old rain-soaked fabric that never dried. I gripped the wheel and forced my eyes on the road, though I kept glancing at her out of the corner of my eye. She asked softly, barely audible, if I could drop her at a motel down the road. I nodded again, though every instinct in me screamed to turn around. We drove in silence, and for a while I thought maybe I was imagining it all, that exhaustion had just gotten the best of me. But then the air in the car shifted, heavier, thicker, like the oxygen itself had been sucked out. I started to feel dizzy, my chest tightening as if someone had placed a stone on it. I tried to draw in a deep breath, but it just wouldn't come. That's when I looked at her directly. Her face was no longer flawless. Half of it was twisted and blackened, skin bubbled like melted plastic. The other half seemed normal, but her mouth curled into something that wasn't quite a smile. Her arms, thin, charred, skin peeling, lifted slowly, and I felt her hands, ice cold, pressing toward my throat. I couldn't move, couldn't scream. My vision blurred, and just before I blacked out, all I remember is the smell of burning hair and the sensation of nails grazing my skin. Next thing I know, I was waking up on the ground. It was morning, bright and too normal. My car had crashed into a tree, but the strange thing, I didn't have a scratch on me. No airbags deployed, no broken glass. Just me lying beside the car like someone had placed me there. That alone was enough to keep me awake for weeks after, but what pushed it over the edge was what I found inside. On the passenger seat lay a white dress, old-fashioned, tattered, faintly stained with soot, the same one she'd been wearing. The car smelled faintly of smoke, even with the windows down. There was no sign of her, no footprints on the damp shoulder where she'd stood, nothing. For months after that, little things started happening that I still can't fully explain. The radio in my car would cut to static whenever I drove alone at night. Once, my rearview mirror tilted on its own, slowly, until it pointed right at the passenger seat. I'd be in my apartment and swear I smelled smoke, faint but sharp, clinging to my clothes. One night, I woke up to a sharp knocking sound. Three knocks, slow, steady, coming from inside my closet. I froze in bed, staring at the door, waiting for something to move. Eventually, I forced myself to open it, nothing but my shirt swaying slightly like someone had just brushed past them. Another time, I was driving late again, and my headlights caught what looked like the hem of a dress vanishing into the trees, white, dragging, just out of reach of the beams. The logical part of me tries to write it off. I was exhausted that night, probably hallucinating. The crash could have jolted me out of a microsleep, and I imagined the rest. Maybe I threw a sheet or some trash in the car and convinced myself later it was her dress. Maybe stress explained the weird incidents afterward. But even as I say that, there's a part of me that knows it wasn't all in my head. I can still remember the weight on my chest, the smell of burned skin, the cold press of her fingers. Even now, sometimes, when I'm driving alone at night through wooded stretches, I catch myself glancing at the passenger seat. Not because I think someone's there exactly, more because it feels like if I look away too long, someone might be. And every once in a while, I swear I see the faint impression of fabric pulled on the seat, like a white dress folded neatly where no one should be sitting. I don't stop driving highways at night, but I'll tell you this, I haven't taken that stretch through Pennsylvania again, and I don't think I ever will. Story number two, I've never been the kind of person to buy into ghost stories. I've always believed there's a reasonable explanation for everything. Faulty wiring, sleep deprivation, the brain filling in blanks when it shouldn't. But there's one night I can't shake, and I don't know if it was my mind playing tricks or something worse. It happened about 2 years ago. My friends and I had been out at a party that stretched past midnight. By the time we left, all of us were starving. None of us had eaten much at the party, just cheap liquor and a couple of chips. And we were all joking about how greasy diner food was exactly what we needed. That's how we ended up pulling into a small diner off Route 16. I don't even remember the name, but the sign outside was flickering like it was dying, half the letters dim. The parking lot was almost empty, just one truck in the corner, engine off, but I could swear I saw exhaust puffing faintly from the tailpipe as if someone was still sitting inside. The moment I opened the diner door, I felt it. Stale, damp air, almost moldy. It wasn't the smell of food at all, more like an old basement that hadn't been aired out. The place looked clean enough, but everything felt still, too still. The linoleum floor was shiny, the booths lined up neatly, but there wasn't a single sound except for the buzzing of the sign outside leaking through the windows. We took a booth in the corner, and after a long minute, a waitress shuffled over with menus. At first, I thought she was tired, but the way she moved was off. Her steps were uneven, like each joint locked and unlocked too late. She didn't make eye contact, just dropped the menus with a strange, jerky motion and walked away stiffly. I leaned in and whispered to my friends that something was wrong, that maybe we should leave. They all laughed it off, calling me paranoid, saying I was just drunk and jumpy. I let it go, but unease was crawling up my spine. When the food came, my skin went cold. There were four of us, but she placed five plates on the table. No extra fork, no explanation, just slid them down with the same stilted motion and walked away again. I stared at the untouched fifth plate, feeling like the booth suddenly wasn't empty on my side anymore. My friends just laughed harder, clinking their glasses of water and digging in. After a few minutes, they all decided to use the restroom before we left. They got up together, joking, and left me alone at the booth. I watched the fifth plate in front of me like it might move on its own. I checked my phone. 5 minutes passed, then 10. At 15, I was irritated. The bathrooms couldn't be that far, and I hadn't heard a single sound from them since they left. That's when the lights flickered, just once at first. Then again, harder, until they went out completely. The darkness inside was heavier than it should have been. I switched on my phone's flashlight, the narrow beam cutting through the still air. The diner was empty. Every booth, every table, completely deserted. My footsteps echoed when I got up, even though the place wasn't that big. I called my friends' names. No answer. As I turned, something caught my attention. At the far end of the diner, by the counter, two tiny red dots hovered in the dark. They weren't steady, more like eyes shifting back and forth, watching me. I told myself it was a reflection, maybe from the neon sign outside. I aimed the light directly at them, but there was nothing there. The beam just caught the chrome napkin dispensers lined along the counter. My stomach dropped when I realized the red dots had reappeared to my left. Closer now.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1-cubic-foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
I didn't want to go toward the bathrooms anymore, so I started toward the faint glow leaking from the back door. It looked like a kitchen light left on. As I moved closer, the temperature dropped sharply. It wasn't just a draft. My skin prickled, and I could see my own breath in the beam of my phone. The door creaked as I pushed it open. A burst of fog spilled out, clinging to my face like icy fingers. Inside was a meat freezer. Fluorescent tubes hummed overhead, half of them flickering. My phone nearly slipped from my hand when the light fell on the racks. On one of the shelves sat the heads of my 3 friends. Their eyes were open, staring blankly, but what froze me was the black sludge seeping from their eye sockets. It dripped slowly, thick like oil. Their mouths were slack, and their bodies were nowhere. The world tilted. My throat tightened like I might throw up right there. I staggered back, gasping, phone beam shaking wildly across the racks of meat until it hit something else. Hooks swaying slowly on their own, though there was no draft inside. I didn't think, I just ran. Out of the kitchen, through the diner, and shoved the door open so hard it slammed against the wall. The night air hit me, and I doubled over, gagging. My legs almost gave out, but when I lifted my head, I froze again. Everything looked normal. The diner lights were back on. The sign outside still flickered faintly, same as when we'd arrived. And standing by the car were my 3 friends, alive, perfectly fine, tapping their feet impatiently. They looked annoyed when they saw me. They asked what had taken me so long in the bathroom. According to them, I'd been gone for almost an hour. I tried to explain, but my throat was dry, my words jumbled. They just shook their heads and laughed, saying I must have passed out drunk in the stall. But I hadn't. I hadn't even had that much to drink at the party. On the drive back, I kept staring at them, waiting for some sign that they weren't real, but they talked the whole way home like nothing happened. When I finally got to my apartment, I locked the door and sat on the floor until the sun came up. I never told them exactly what I saw. I've thought about it 100 times since. Maybe I hallucinated. Maybe I was so tired and buzzed that my brain stitched together something from shadows and bad lighting. But every time I convince myself of that, I remember one detail I can't explain. The next morning, when I opened my phone gallery, I found a photo I don't remember taking. It was blurry and dark, but the focus was clear enough. A close-up of one of my friend's faces, eyes wide, black liquid running down their cheeks. I deleted it instantly, but sometimes I still see the image when I close my eyes. And ever since that night, I can't eat at diners anymore. Story number 3, I've been an EMT for nearly a decade. You see a lot on this job, wrecks that twist metal like foil, overdoses where you're trying to breathe for someone who's already halfway gone, suicides, fights, stuff that leaves images in your head you can't scrub out, even when you want to. But nothing sticks with me quite like one run I got called out to about a year ago. It was different. And to this day, I can't explain it in a way that makes sense. It was just past 1 a.m. when the dispatch came through. A possible crash on the highway north of Salem, Oregon. Multiple calls had come in about smoke and screeching tires. Drivers sounded panicked. The way the call came through, I expected twisted cars, maybe fire, maybe bodies. Those middle-of-the-night wrecks are rarely minor. I hit the sirens, lights cutting through the dark stretch of road. The highway up there is empty that late, just miles of asphalt lined by tall pines and farmland with no lights for long stretches. I had the window cracked, cool air cutting in, when suddenly every single radio channel started bleeding together. My dispatch, the police band, even a local station, everything overlapped at once, turning into static and garbled voices. It wasn't just background fuzz either. It was sharp, high-pitched, and so loud it felt like the inside of my skull was vibrating. My teeth ached. I couldn't even make out a single word. I fumbled with the knobs, turned the volume down, and nothing changed. That's when I saw it. Up ahead, barreling down the wrong side of the highway, was a huge freight truck. Completely matte black, no lights, no markings. It wasn't drifting either. It was centered in the lane, steady, like it knew exactly where it was going. I had about 2 seconds to react. My heart jumped into my throat as I swerved hard to the shoulder, the ambulance nearly tipping from the weight shift. Gravel sprayed the guardrail as I fought to steady the wheel. I braced for impact. There was no way that truck wasn't going to clip me, but nothing happened. I whipped my head to the side mirror and saw only open road. No taillights, no headlights, no shape, no reflection. Just black asphalt stretching out under the moonlight. I slowed, adrenaline still kicking, thinking maybe the driver had lost control and plowed off into the ditch. I circled back, scanning both shoulders. No skid marks, no broken glass, not even a bent blade of grass. The road was as clean as if nothing had passed at all. Before I could process that, the ambulance alarm system suddenly went off inside the rig. It wasn't the siren, I had that switched off. It was the internal emergency buzzer, the one that only sounds if the rig detects a fire or internal failure. It wailed through the cabin like a banshee. I nearly jumped out of my seat. I cut the ignition, pulled the key, but it didn't stop. The sound just rang in that boxy metal space until finally it cut off mid-scream, like someone yanked the cord. The silence that followed was worse. I stepped out, flashlight in hand, and walked the shoulder. The trees looked taller than usual, pressing in on the road. There was no crash, no truck, nothing at all. Just me, my rig idling faintly, and the sound of my own breathing. By the time I reached the reported mile marker, it was clear there hadn't been a crash. The asphalt was smooth, undisturbed. No smoke, no skid marks, no debris. I called dispatch again, asked them to confirm the report. My colleague on the other end sounded confused, even a little annoyed. He said no such crash had been logged and no one else was en route. He asked if I was sure I'd heard right. I didn't answer right away. I tried to chalk it up to fatigue, maybe even a hallucination from stress, but things didn't stop there. On the way back to the station, I kept seeing faint smears of light along the tree line, like reflections off glass but shifting, darting between trunks as though moving with me. Once, a pale shape darted across the road far ahead, vanishing into the woods. When I slowed to look, nothing was there. The strangest moment came when I finally pulled into the bay. I shut everything down, logged my mileage, started filling out paperwork. That's when I noticed the smell, a sharp tang of burning rubber and diesel, faint but steady, like it was baked into the inside of the rig. My ambulance had just come out of maintenance 2 days before. The smell clung to my jacket, my hands. It didn't fade until I'd showered at home. For the next few weeks, I couldn't shake the feeling that something had followed me back that night. My radios would crackle with the same static when I drove that stretch again, even on clear runs. Sometimes I'd hear what sounded like a horn blaring faintly behind me, even when the road was empty. One night, about a month later, I was alone restocking supplies in the back of the ambulance when the entire box rocked like something had slammed into it from the outside. I jumped out, thinking someone had clipped the rig, but the lot was empty, not a soul around. I stopped telling people after that. No one believes an EMT who says they were almost run down by a phantom truck. The rational explanation is fatigue, auditory hallucinations, maybe interference from multiple radio bands crossing at once. And maybe I did nod off for a second on that dark stretch, dreamed it up, panicked myself. But here's the thing. Every so often on night runs near Salem, I'll pass that same stretch of highway, always around the same mile marker. And almost without fail, the radios start to hiss, voices bleeding in. Not words, just noise. My hands sweat, my pulse kicks up, and I can't stop glancing at the opposite lane, waiting to see matte black metal bearing down on me again. I've never seen the truck since, but once, while driving that route at dusk, I caught something in my side mirror. Just for a split second, the vague, looming outline of a trailer behind me, darker than the rest of the road with no lights, no reflection. When I blinked, it was gone. Maybe I imagined it. Maybe it was a trick of the headlights behind me. But even now, when I think about that night, the memory doesn't feel like imagination. It feels like something I barely survived. And every time the radio crackles, I wonder if I'll see it again. Barreling straight for me, leaving nothing behind. Story number four. This happened last fall, and I still don't know what to make of it. My girlfriend and I were driving through Nevada on a road trip. We weren't familiar with the area, and I'd taken a wrong exit somewhere along the way. By the time I realized, we were way off from the interstate and deep into desert back roads. It was already evening, and the fuel gauge was sitting just above empty. My girlfriend had dozed off with her head against the window, leaving me alone with my nerves and the long, empty stretches of sand and scrub. So when I saw a faded roadside sign that said, "Last gas for 50 miles," I felt this wave of relief. The sign had an arrow pointing down a narrow road. I turned, following it, and after a few minutes, I saw the station sitting in the middle of nowhere. The place looked like it hadn't been updated since the 1960s. The neon sign buzzed, lighting up half the word GAS. The windows were coated in a layer of dust, and the gas pumps looked like they belonged in a museum. There was just one other car in the gravel lot, a blue Ford that looked like it had been parked there for decades. It was covered in a thick film of dust, even the windshield. I pulled in, parked near the pumps, and shut off the engine. For a moment, everything was dead quiet, just the ticking sound of my cooling engine and the faint buzz of the neon. Inside, it was even stranger. The store smelled like dust and oil. Shelves were stocked, but everything looked a little too old, like potato chip bags with logos I didn't recognize and soda cans with faded labels. The man behind the counter stood rigid, almost too still, as if he'd been waiting for me. His skin looked gray in the flickering light, and his hands rested flat on the counter. When I got closer, I noticed his fingers were stained, dark and dirty, as if he'd been digging in soil that never washed off. I tried talking to him, asked if he knew how to get back to the interstate. He didn't answer. He just looked at me with glassy, unblinking eyes. After a long pause, he pulled out a notepad, drew a shaky map, and slid it across. His hands left faint smudges on the paper. I felt this weird chill, but told myself he was just eccentric. I paid for gas, grabbed a couple of snacks, and went back outside. As I pumped, I glanced at the Ford. Something about it unsettled me. The driver's side door was slightly open, just a crack. It hadn't been when I first saw it. I got back in my car, started the engine, and drove off quickly, following the map. I didn't say anything to my girlfriend. She was still asleep, and I didn't want to wake her with my paranoia. But 20 minutes later, I saw a glow up ahead. My stomach sank when I realized it was the same neon sign, same crooked letters, same gravel lot, same blue Ford in the exact same place. I can't describe the dread that hit me. It wasn't just deja vu. It was like stepping into a loop I couldn't escape. Against my better judgment, I pulled in again. The store looked identical. Same dusty shelves, same buzzing lights, same man behind the counter. Only this time, there was another vehicle next to the Ford, a rusty white pickup. Its hood was popped open, as if someone had just been working on it, but the lot was empty, except for me. The man's eyes followed me as soon as I stepped inside. He didn't write another map this time. He just stared, his hands still dark, still pressed flat on the counter. I couldn't stand being in there another second. I left without buying anything, slammed the car door shut, and drove off as fast as I dared. My girlfriend stirred awake when I hit a bump in the road. For a second, I glanced at her, relieved she was up. But what I saw almost made me swerve. Her mouth was slightly open, but instead of her normal teeth, I swear I saw sharp, jagged points, like an animal's. It only lasted a fraction of a second. I blinked, and they were gone. She looked normal, confused, and asking where we were. I told her we were fine, just lost. I didn't dare say more. The road felt endless after that. Every shadow looked like something watching. I kept checking the rearview mirror, half expecting to see the Ford or the pickup following us. My girlfriend eventually fell asleep again, but I kept driving with my hands clenched tight on the wheel, heart racing every time headlights appeared in the distance. Finally, an hour later, I saw signs for a major highway. When we merged onto it, I almost cried with relief. The GPS worked again, and I kept driving until we reached a crowded rest stop. Only then did I let myself breathe. Later, when I checked the map, I realized that station wasn't anywhere near the route we'd taken. Nothing should have been there, let alone twice. I keep replaying the details in my head. The Ford door cracked open, the man's soil-stained hands, the silent way he watched me. Sometimes I wonder if the pickup meant someone else had arrived, and I had been too slow leaving. Other times, I wonder about that brief glimpse of my girlfriend. I try to convince myself it was exhaustion, headlights playing tricks, my brain filling in shadows. That has to be it. Still, I can't shake the feeling that the man behind the counter wasn't just running a gas station. It felt more like he was waiting, like he was keeping watch over something in the desert, something that was supposed to come through me. Every now and then, I dream about those dark hands pushing the map toward me, and I wake with the smell of dust and oil in my nose. I don't think I'll ever go back to Nevada. Story number 5. It was late November, a Thursday night, and I was driving back from work. My shift had dragged longer than usual, and by the time I hit the highway, it was already dark. The stretch I take is usually packed with trucks, buses, cabs, all kinds of vehicles. You never see it empty. But that night, it was strangely deserted. No taillights, no headlights, no honking, just silence and the hum of my own engine. I thought it was weird, but I kept driving until I noticed a car parked ahead on the shoulder. Its hazard lights weren't on, but the airbags had deployed, ballooned out in a way that made it look like something had just happened. I slowed down, pulled over, and got out. The air was colder than it should have been, sharp enough that I could see my breath, even though it wasn't winter cold yet. I approached the car. The driver's door was wide open, the interior lights glowing faintly. No broken glass, no blood, no skid marks, nothing. It was like someone had carefully staged the car to look like an accident, but erased every sign of damage. I leaned closer, trying to peek inside, and that's when the horn suddenly blared. It wasn't a short honk. It was a long, angry sound that made me jump back so hard I almost tripped. The car went silent again, just as quickly. I stood there, my chest pounding, laughing under my breath to convince myself it was just a short in the wiring. Cars honk randomly sometimes when circuits mess up, right? But that laugh died the second I turned back towards my own car. It wasn't there. The shoulder where I had parked was empty, just asphalt stretching behind me. No headlights, no familiar shape, nothing. I ran up and down the road thinking maybe I had parked further back, maybe I was disoriented, but the stretch was empty both ways. The silence was suffocating. I pulled out my phone, but of course, no signal. Not even a single bar. I remember standing there, heart hammering, feeling like I was being watched. The woods on the side of the road suddenly looked inviting in a way that didn't make sense. It was like something was pulling me in, whispering without words. Before I realized it, my legs were moving on their own. The further I walked, the colder it got. The air smelled damp, heavy with rot, like old leaves after rain. My shoes crunched against branches, but the sound seemed swallowed by the trees. I felt my pulse in my ears, each step louder than the last. Then in a small clearing, I saw it. My car. Just standing there in the middle of the woods like someone had dropped it from above. But it wasn't the same. The windows were streaked with moss, green patches climbing up the doors. Water dripped steadily from the roof as if it had been sitting under rain for months. I swear I could hear a faint trickling sound coming from inside. I reached for the door handle, but it was slimy, covered in something that stuck to my skin. The car smelled of stagnant pond water, and then just as I blinked, I was suddenly back behind the wheel, driving. The highway was alive again, cars rushing past me, horns blaring, like nothing had happened. For a second, I thought I had dozed off at the wheel and dreamed the whole thing, but my hands were trembling on the steering wheel. My phone buzzed back to life, service returning. The clock on the dashboard showed I had lost almost an hour. I didn't tell anyone that night, but things didn't stop there. Over the next week, I started noticing little changes. My car smelled faintly of damp leaves no matter how much I cleaned it. Once, when I adjusted my rearview mirror, I swore I saw the inside covered in moss again, just for a split second before it went back to normal. At night sometimes, I'd hear a faint dripping sound from the garage even though the car wasn't leaking anything. Once I opened the door and found muddy footprints leading up to the driver's side, except they didn't match my shoes. The highway itself never felt the same. I avoided that stretch, but sometimes, even on different roads, I'd catch glimpses of that abandoned car parked on the shoulder, far ahead. Same shape, same open door, always too far to make out clearly. I told myself it could be a trick of the lights, some coincidence. Maybe I had been exhausted that night and imagined half of it. Maybe I had pulled over somewhere else entirely and lost track of time. It's easy to explain away things when you're not in the moment. But last night was different. I woke up to the horn blaring from my own car, even though my keys were inside on the counter. By the time I ran to the garage, it was silent again. The airbags had deployed inside, puffed out like they had in that abandoned car on the highway. And in the condensation on the windshield, there were handprints, not mine. I wiped them away, but even now when I look at that car, I feel the same pull I did from the woods that night. Like something wants me to follow again. Maybe it was just a hallucination from fatigue. Maybe someone tampered with my car as a prank. Maybe the horn, the moss, the footprints. They all have logical explanations if I look hard enough. But the smell of stagnant water hasn't gone away. And sometimes when I'm driving alone, I hear dripping inside the car, even though everything looks dry. I don't take that highway anymore. But I know if I did, I'd see it waiting. And I'm scared that next time, if I follow, I won't come back to the road at all. Story number 6. I've never liked that highway stretch. Even during the day, it had a strange emptiness to it. The trees on both sides seemed too close, too heavy, like they were leaning in. The road itself wasn't used much except by trucks, and the only people I'd ever seen there looked rough. Men on motorbikes who slowed down just enough to stare a little too long. News articles about robberies and accidents on that road kept floating back in my head every time I had to pass it. As a woman, it already felt unsafe, and after dark, I avoided it completely. But that night, I didn't have much of a choice. I had been at my parents' house, and the meeting at work had run late. By the time I was driving back, it was close to 12:30 in the morning. I told myself to stay calm, to keep my focus on the road. The stretch was only about 8 or 9 kilometers. 15 minutes, maybe, if I just drove steadily. The highway was unnervingly still, No cars, no trucks, no sound except the dull hum of my own engine. My headlights cut through the dark, but it felt like they barely reached beyond a few feet. That's when I saw the tree. It wasn't the first time I'd noticed it. It grew right in the median, an old gnarled thing with branches that stuck out so far they seemed to scratch at the air above the lanes. But at night it looked different. The shape was almost skeletal, the limbs twisted like arms frozen in mid-motion. As I approached, I slowed down without realizing it. Something was hanging from one of the branches. It swayed lightly like a pendulum. At first I thought it was some debris, maybe a bag or cloth stuck in the branches. But as I got closer, I saw the outline of a body, a person. The arms hung limp and the head slumped unnaturally. The face, or what should have been a face, looked hollow. My stomach twisted. I pulled my car to the side, half panicked and half thinking I had to call for help. My hand was already dialing 911. The operator's voice hadn't even come through yet when I looked up again. The body wasn't on the same branch anymore. It was a little higher up, swaying from another limb, like it had shifted itself. I froze, staring at the tree. The swaying grew more violent, unnatural, almost jerking. There was no wind, not even the faintest breeze. My throat went dry, and before I could process anything, I felt it. Something coarse, rough, tightening around my neck. A rope. It snapped tight and yanked me back so hard I lost my footing and hit the ground. The phone flew from my hand, screen cracking as it skidded across the asphalt. The rope dug into my skin, each second cutting deeper, choking the air from me. I clawed at it, gasping, trying to scream, but the sound came out muffled, buried somewhere in my chest. My body was dragged along the road, hard and fast, gravel tearing into my arms and legs. I could feel my shoes scraping against the asphalt. The rope pulled tighter and tighter, burning into my throat. There was nothing to hold on to, nothing to grab. Panic turned everything blurry. My head throbbed, my chest screamed for air, and I realized in a horrible clarity that I was being choked to death. And then, just as suddenly, it stopped. The rope slackened like someone had let go. I collapsed against the road, coughing, clutching at my throat. My lungs burned as I tried to suck in air. When I turned around, there was nothing there. No one holding the rope, no body swaying from the tree, nothing but that grotesque outline of branches against the night sky. My phone lay cracked, but still glowing faintly a few feet away. I didn't even think. I stumbled up, half running, half limping back into my car. My hands shook so badly I could barely jam the key into the ignition. I didn't bother to check mirrors or headlights. I just drove as fast as the car could go, the road a blur. I didn't stop until I was well out of that stretch, until the lights of the city started coming into view. Only then did I glance in the mirror. There was no body, no rope, just my pale face staring back. But the faint red lines were still there, circling my neck. At home, I went straight to the bathroom and turned on the light. My reflection showed angry rope marks etched deep into my skin, ridges and bruises that no amount of imagination could explain away. I sat on the cold bathroom floor, shaking, trying to reason with myself. Maybe I'd hallucinated. Maybe I'd tripped on something by the road. And in my panic, my mind filled in the rest. But how do you explain marks like that? For weeks after, I couldn't sleep properly. Every time I closed my eyes, I felt the tightening around my neck again, the dragging, the suffocating panic. Sometimes in the quiet of my room, I swore I heard the faint scrape of a rope tightening, fibers stretching against strain. Once I woke up with my throat sore and the marks darker than before, though I hadn't gone near that highway again. I started reading about that stretch. Some articles mentioned an accident years ago where a man had hanged himself from the tree after losing his family in a crash. Others spoke of bodies being dumped there, robberies gone wrong, people vanishing. Nothing concrete, just fragments of rumor and speculation. A skeptic could argue it all away. Sleep paralysis, stress hallucinations. Maybe I caught my neck on something sharp and the brain filled in the rest. Maybe the human mind just bends reality when it's too scared to process what it's seeing. But I know what I felt that night. The pressure, the dragging, the suffocating panic. Those things weren't in my head. They left their mark, literally. I've never taken that road again, not even during the day. I'd rather drive an hour around it than risk even a minute on that stretch. But sometimes when I'm driving late on some other lonely road, I feel it again, a phantom tightness around my throat, like someone somewhere is still waiting, rope in hand. Maybe it's just my nerves. Maybe it's trauma. Or maybe there's something on that road that doesn't want anyone making it through alive. And the worst part is, I'll never really know. Story number 7. Whatever happened to me a few months back has stuck in my head like a splinter I can't pull out. I keep replaying it, trying to come up with something that can give me answers, but nothing has worked till now. It was late evening, around 8:30, when I decided to take the new highway for the first time. Friends had mentioned it shaved at least half an hour off the trip. I wasn't in a rush, but the curiosity got me. The first stretch was smooth, well-paved asphalt, barely any traffic, just the occasional pair of headlights passing. I had music on low, window slightly cracked for the breeze, and it felt normal. Then I noticed a sign I didn't remember anyone mentioning. Tunnel ahead, 1 kilometer. I frowned because from everything I'd heard about this highway, there weren't supposed to be any tunnels. Still, I figured maybe construction had changed plans. As I approached, the road dipped downward, and the black mouth of a tunnel appeared. There were no lights inside, no overhead lamps, nothing but a gaping hole. My headlights barely carved out a path as I rolled in. At first, it was just the silence that struck me. No echo of my tires, no hum of other vehicles. Just me, the car, and the faint whir of the engine bouncing back dully. Then a sound cut through, short, sharp, metallic. A honk, but not a car's honk. It was shriller, deeper, almost vibrating. I had only ever heard that sound from one thing, a train. I glanced in my mirrors and my stomach dropped. Behind me, where the tunnel wall should have been, I saw tracks gleaming faintly in my headlights. My tires were no longer rolling on road but rails. And behind me, bearing down fast, was a train. The panic hit instantly. My chest tightened, and my grip on the steering wheel went slick with sweat. I slammed the accelerator, but the car felt heavier than usual, like it was dragging. The train's horn blared again, echoing so loudly it rattled inside my skull. I checked the rearview mirror. The train wasn't just a blur of metal. It was close enough that I could make out the engine. And then I saw the driver. It wasn't an adult, it was a child. The pale face of a boy, maybe 9 or 10, stared at me through the front window of the engine. His hands gripped the controls, but his eyes were locked on mine.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here, and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals, and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Tight and unblinking. The image burned into my brain so clearly that I nearly lost control of the wheel. I pushed harder on the gas. The tunnel stretched endlessly. Black walls never breaking. No exits, no lights, just me racing forward. The sound of the engine straining and that horn screeching closer. My heart pounded so hard it felt like it might burst out of my chest. The lights of the train grew brighter, swallowing up the rear view. The tunnel was filling with white, washing over the inside of my car until I could barely see the dash. Then, nothing. No crash, no screech of metal, no impact. Suddenly, I was outside. My tires hit regular asphalt again, and the tunnel was gone. I slammed the brakes and skidded to the shoulder. Behind me, there was no tunnel entrance, no tracks, just the same two-lane highway I had been driving before. The night air was unnervingly still. The fog had rolled in thick, hugging the road like a curtain. It was the kind of fog that swallowed sound, making the silence feel heavier. I sat there shaking, hands clutching the wheel long after the car stopped. I must have sat like that for 10 minutes, staring into the mirror, half expecting to see the glow of a train's light emerge from the mist. But there was nothing. I told myself it had to be exhaustion. Maybe I dozed off at the wheel. Maybe it was some weird stress dream. But the sweat soaking my shirt and the dull ache in my chest from my racing heart felt too real. The next day I mentioned it to a friend, keeping it vague. He laughed it off and said I probably mixed up roads and got spooked. But when I looked up the official map of the highway later, I noticed something that made me feel worse. That stretch of road was flat. No dips, no tunnels planned, no underpasses. Nothing. I never took that route again, but that's not where it ended. A week later, while parking at the grocery store, I noticed faint scratches running along the side of my car. Thin, parallel lines, like something metallic had scraped by. They hadn't been there before. Two nights after that, I woke up to a faint sound outside my apartment window. It was distant at first, low, drawn out. Then it grew louder, echoing unnaturally. It was the same horn, the exact same tone. I rushed to the window, nothing but an empty street lit by the yellow glow of streetlights. No cars, no people. No train, obviously. I closed the curtains and sat in the dark for hours, waiting for it to come again. It hasn't, not exactly. But every now and then, when I'm driving late at night and I catch a glimpse in my mirror, my stomach knots. Sometimes I think I see a pair of white lights far back on the road, too bright and too high up to be headlights. And sometimes, if I look too long, I swear I can make out the faint outline of tracks running under my tires, flickering in and out of view like a mirage. I've tried rationalizing it. Stress, fatigue, hallucinations. Maybe the scratches were from a shopping cart. Maybe the horn I heard was just a truck with bad brakes. But every explanation feels like a flimsy bandage over something much bigger. The worst part is that image of the boy. His face doesn't leave me. Pale skin, wide eyes, small hands gripping controls he had no business holding. When I close my eyes sometimes, I don't just see him in the train. I see him reflected in my own rearview mirror, sitting silently in the back seat. I keep driving other routes now, sticking to crowded streets even if they take longer. But I can't shake the thought that one day, no matter which road I'm on, I'll hear that horn again. And maybe next time, there won't be an exit. Thanks for watching. Don't leave before leaving a like to this video. Also, hit the subscribe button to support my work. And as always, have a horrific nightmare, my dear.